All right, welcome into the third hour of the game. Let's hear on 102.5, 106.3 the game. Big Joe alongside Big Kenny behind the glass, Elijah Campbell with us tonight. A lot of games that are happening, a lot of games that are going on, a lot of games with playoff implications, a lot of games with region championships. So it's with the top and the bottom of the hour. Let's go to the scoreboard. Hit it, Kenny. All right, here we go. Games that we have scores on so far. Lipscomb over BGA, 28-0. Blackman over Siegel, 20-7. Centennial over Brentwood, 3-0. Gallatin and Clarksville tied at 7. Springfield over Clarksville Northwest, 29-0. Gordonsville over Clay County, 7-6. Cookeville over Shevville, 20-14. Nolensville leads Franklin County, 6-0. Right now, Green Hill on top of Mount Juliet, 12-7. Mount Juliet was driving, fumbled inside the 15-yard line. Right now, Green Hill leads 12-7. That game in the second quarter. Ravenwood up over Independence, 21-7. Laverne leads McGavick, 14-0 in the second quarter. Creekwood on top of Lawrence County, 27-0. Lewis County, top of Riverside, 7-0. Greenbrier leads Marshall County, 7-6. That game in the second quarter. Nashville Christian on top of DCA, 21-7. Oakland leads Rockville 35-0. Henry County on top of Portland. They just scored. That is 22-0. Loretto leads Richland 14-13. Smith County just scored on top of East Nashville 7-6. Franklin leads Summit 7-0. Sycamore on top of Joe Byrne 6-0. Tullahoma leads Glencliff 21-0. Trousdale County tied with Watertown at 7. At halftime, Waverly leads Fairview 20-14. Wayne County over Collinwood, 21-0. West Creek leads Hendersonville, 14-7. Westmoreland over Harpa, 28-0. The White House leads White House Heritage, 13-0. That game at halftime. The last score we got down from Chattanooga, McCauley on top of Pope John Paul, 7-0. And that is your latest scoreboard update that goes on. Elijah, any scores surprise you so far?
The biggest surprise so far, Joe, as I mute my mic, I'm an idiot, is Laverne. The Laverne 14-0 start over McGavick. It still has my head spinning. We got the result from Lance so far whenever he came in the last segment about how it's gone down. And we're potentially seeing a 3-7 team make the playoffs over a 6-4 team because one team is playing just much better at the right time. That is Tennessee high school football for you. That's a surprising one. And we're inching to half in Smith County and East Nashville, and Smith County's up 1. We talked about maybe the kicking game being the Achilles heel for East Nashville. And as soon as we said that, I got the text about a long touchdown pass that Smith County followed up with, and they converted the PAT. They're up 7-6 at the half. And that's a team that we talked so highly of, East Nashville, because East Nashville has had an insanely great year so far. We just haven't talked much about Smith County. They have been in the shadows. They have been winning games quietly, 8-1 all season long. And here they are with a chance to make some noise and steal a region championship from the clutches of the East Nashville team. Like, those are the two ones right now that kind of have me shook a little bit, that have kind of jarred my sense of reality, because I expect East Nashville and McGavick to be winning tonight. And those are two teams with chips on their shoulders with a lot to play for, that have really come out of the gates playing well at home.
I just think it's crazy, the fact that we've talked all year long about, hey, it's great to win all your games, but as long as you win those win those region games, you'll be fantastic. And Laverne is a prime example of that, of doing that, getting the job done within the region. Because again, we're doing this all night long talking about this, but for those who follow high school football, I mean, that's a team, Laverne, and we've talked about through the show, is just, we didn't pay attention to. And then they knock off Overton, and we triple checked that score that night, and not only they beat them, they beat them well. We talked to the head coach, Mike Woodard, and says, you know, the guys just finally got it this week, and they played hard, they played tough, and it rolled on, and they played Centennial tough, now leading McGavick right now with what's on the line. I mean, that's a heck of a job by the head coach, Mike Woodard, at Laverne, when this team could have packed in and said, hey, we'll see you in 2023.
Easily, yeah. And that just goes to show, too, that it's a war of attrition, right? Like, you can have a really bad 7 weeks to the season, but in every region, there's always a couple teams that are winnable. There's always some winnable games, right? And in this region, your winnable games were Dixon County and Antioch. And it's like, okay, we're competitive with those three teams or those two other teams, right? Well, they even split those. So now you have the task of having to win games that are against teams that are way up in the regions. And when they were able to do that with John Overton, like, it seemed fluky. You're right. It, like, we had to double check to make sure we read the score right. It seemed fluky. But what it probably did was instill a confidence in this team that if we could do that to John Overton, we're in a scenario where we can create some absolute havoc if we beat McGavick. And didn't mean for that to rhyme, but it did. And it's a reality that's probably going to happen if they continue to just keep their foot on the gas. And voila, you're in the playoffs. You pull off two upsets to get into the playoffs. That is pretty significant, and that would be a really cool story no matter what happened in the playoffs, right? You can start off 1-6, pull yourself out from that hole, and make the playoffs by beating two really good teams in your region. That's something these kids are going to remember for the longest time, regardless of what happens after this week. Like, that's a really, really cool situation for those kids.
It is. By the way, another score that Siegel has cut the lead. They're taking on Blackman right now. So now Blackman up 20-14 over Siegel. Siegel cannot make the playoffs, but they can play a little spoiler right now, I guess, right? Or has Blackman secured that second spot?
Yes, Blackman has secured that second spot right now, I believe. Well, they're 3-1 in the region. Rockville's at 2-2. Stewart's Creek's at 2-2. Rockville's not going to win, I don't believe. I hate to speak prematurely, but we're in the running clock game with them. They're getting scary close to that. And then,
which, by the way,
about Stewart's Creek,
running clock brought to you by Elijah Campbell Enterprises, just for those who want to know.
A fast-growing company that might actually end up buying Twitter in 5 years. Who knows? I mean, we are skyrocketing right now.
Oh, hey, real quick.
Go ahead and buy low now.
Another score for you. Yes. DeKalb County's up on Stone Memorial, 21-7. That a shocker?
Oh, that is a shocker. That would be a team that's playing spoiler. Now, DeKalb's going to make the playoffs anyway, right? The four teams in that region are very fairly set. I was talking to Noah McKay from the Upper Cumberland Reporter about this. They're at that game right now. He'll join us later. He laid this out, assuming that Macon beats Cumberland, which is, I would say, a safe bet because Macon's really good. Cumberland's had a rough year. And Upperman beating Livingston, which Upperman's really good. Livingston hasn't won a game in 2 years. So it's a safe assumption. So if Stone wins, Stone would win the region. Upperman second, Macon third, DeKalb fourth. With a DeKalb win, Upperman's first, Macon second, DeKalb third, Stone fourth. So for Stone tonight, it's you win the region and the one seed. You lose, and you are the four seed, and you have to travel out east in Chattanooga to play East Hamilton.
Wow.
That's a pretty tough turn of events and turn of fortunes if they're not able to pull themselves out from this two-touchdown deficit.
Santa Vall on Twitter sent me a note, says, congrats to Easton Elliott on becoming the second player in Waverly High School history to rush for 2,000 yards in a single season and breaking the record held by Ronnie Dacus for 55 years. So Waverly leads 20-14 and a half, and then Easton Elliott, the running back, has rushed for 2,000. I don't care what level you are, 2,000 yards, pretty darn good.
That's incredible. That's an accomplishment. I mean, someone should let him keep that ball after the game and be like, this is the one you broke a school record. Anytime you break a record that's lasted for 50 plus years, I don't care what it is, whether it be rushing yards, passing yards, tackles, water cups handed out in the middle of a game, right, which I'm sure our man Chase McKay broke at FRA, and I guarantee you stands here today. Guarantee you it stands.
Oh, God.
That's one you keep. That's a record you keep close to you, and it's always really impressive. And man, good for Easton Elliott. Definitely got to give him a shout out right now. 2,000 yards is mighty impressive stuff. They still have a job to do as well. He can go ahead and break a record and win a region championship in one night if they seal the deal against Fairview.
By the way, I'm being told they're listening to us in Waverly. I got a message that said he's only played 9 games. They only have a 9-game season.
Oh, my God. That's right. Yes. Wow. I forget. I think they had a game either call off or they had 2 bye weeks. I know there's a lot of schools in the state that have had that schedule. But in 9 games going 2,000, Joe, we're not math majors. So I'm going to loosely try to bring up my calculator here real quick to do how many that is per game, but not even a full season that a lot of other people gets a play. By my accounts, that's 222.2 repeating yards per game.
Look at you.
That's
man.
Reliable.
Look at
that's
you.
Reliable.
It is. Another game we've been paying attention to. Thank you, Tim Swift, for tweeting this out. Smyrna leads Overton 24-6 at halftime.
Wow. Oh, wow. I mean, Smyrna is a really good team. That's a team that's been undefeated for a lot of the year. These are two teams that I feel like are kind of similar, Smyrna and John Overton. And it's significant in region standing for these two, even though they can't win the region, right? I mean, Cane Ridge has that bad boy pretty well locked up. Right. However, the winner of this game gets the second place. Whoever falls in this game will get third. This is the matter of hosting a playoff game or not hosting, or hosting a playoff game or traveling for a playoff game. So if the result holds, Smyrna will take the 2 seed and Overton will take the 3.
Oh, man, just we got chaos. I mean, we got fun chaos that's happening. It's going on right now. All right, Elijah, do not go anywhere. We'll take a break. We got more scores and everything. We're getting to halftime. A lot of these games and scores are coming in fast and furious. And we got you covered tonight here on the Game Blitz on 102.5, 106.3. The Game brought to you by our good friends at Apple Collision Center and National Playmakers Academy. All right, welcome back in to the Game Blitz here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by Apple Collision Center and National Playmakers Academy. Let's go back to the phone line, brought to you by Elijah Campbell Enterprises. Our man Marthony is at the Oakland-Rockville game tonight. And can you keep up with Oakland scoring every other drive there, Marthony?
Guys, I'm trying to do the best I can. I swear, I feel like every time that I make a tweet, 5-10 minutes later, I got to come back and make another one. The Patriots are just putting the punch on the board so far once again. 35-0 here at halftime. It's pretty much been ugly, really, from the start of the game. Rockville, second play of the drive, opening the drive, fumbles it. 3 plays later, Oakland gets on the board. And after that, it's just been all Oakland, really, throughout the whole first half.
It looks like, Marthony, since Oakland lost that game to CPA, they've been on a tear. I don't know how much you've covered them, but every time we look at a score on them, they're just run. I mean, they're not running the score, but they're like fully getting into it now and everything. I think they woke up after that CPA loss, but you're seeing them in action tonight where they're just business as usual, isn't it?
Yeah, I was also here last week when they played against Liberty Creek. They put up 69 points last week, so this is kind of pretty much business as usual. Yeah, for sure. And the thing is, it hasn't been just with the offense. They've been doing it on special teams. They got a block punt for a touchdown tonight, a punt return for a touchdown tonight. So it's been in all phases of the game that Oakland has just been dominating, and they've just been on the curve to make sure, I guess, you know, after that CPA loss, they just really never lose another one again so far. And so it's looking like they're definitely eyes ahead, tunnel vision each week, been pretty much in these people in dominating fashion.
Talking to my man, Marthony Sanders. He's there at Rockville in Oakland right now. And Oakland obviously dropping the hammer, doing what Oakland does. But, Marthony, coming into this game, Rockville had a chance to secure a playoff spot with a win. It was a really big one for them. You knew they were going to give them everything they had. How deflating does it kind of feel over on Rockville's side to be able to, coming into a game like of this magnitude, and just run into a buzzsaw?
Yeah, I've kind of been going down the sidelines mainly on Rockville side, just trying to see how everybody's doing. And, I mean, honestly, you know, the guys are definitely, you know, still trying to keep the spirits up, keep the morale up. But, you know, it's easier said than done when you're going against a team like Oakland. And then when you have the miscues that they're having, you know, punts getting blocked, fumbling. They had one possession where they actually were dropping the football. They had a 3rd and 1. That's a false start. Now it's 3rd and 6. Incomplete pass, and next play, now you have to punt and get the ball right back to Oakland, and they score again. So, I know it's been kind of hard for this Rockville team. They've been reeling. You know, they started off the season, I think, 4-1 their first 5 games, and, you know, now on this losing streak, and then coming into a game like tonight against Oakland where you pretty much have to be almost perfect, you know, against the Patriots, and having those miscues like that is definitely going to hurt your chances, especially when it's pretty much a must-win game for them to secure a playoff spot.
And Marthy, last one for me. I don't know if you've gotten to watch Rockville much outside of tonight, but you mentioned it. They were 4-1 at a certain part of the year, and they've really hit hard times. But at least from tonight, like, what does it kind of look like that they probably struggled with the most? That might be one of those things that just kind of encapsulates what a rough back nine of the year looked like for them.
Not being able to take care of, like, the little things. Like I said, those small penalties that you may think may not come up big right now because of how the scoreboard is, but there's a chance for you to, you know, get something going here right before halftime, and you have that penalty. They also had a chance to get an interception right before halftime, too, to drop the interception. Even when they did force Oakland to fumble the football out of the end zone for a touchback, that next drive pretty much nothing going. So it was just kind of like the little things they've been struggling on tonight that pretty much could keep them in this game. So it being 35-0 is kind of almost like a good thing in a way, because it really could be a lot more points on the board that Oakland could have had.
Marthony, thanks for the update, brother. Call us back in a little bit, man. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right, Oakland rolling night over Rockville. That's going on right there. It's still
Thank
happening,
you,
getting it done. Another update, Page leads Leakey County 38-3 right now. That game is going to halftime. Let's go back to the phone lines.
Sorry,
brought to you
Dan.
By Elijah Campbell Enterprises. Junie Riddle is at the Mount Juliet Green Hill game. Junie, take it away.
Guys, the score does not indicate how big this game really is. I mean, there's been so many highlighted plays. I mean, the first couple drives from Mount Juliet were 3-and-out. But that third offensive look, they really, really got going. And a huge controversial moment in this game happened. It looked like there was an inadvertent whistle, and the quarterback for Mount Juliet kind of hesitated a little bit and ended up the play kept going, and he ended up fumbling on the play, giving it back to Green Hill. But no worries, this Mount Juliet defense that keeps stepping up in big moments took the ball back to the Golden Bears with an interception after getting some really good pressure on Cade Mahoney, the quarterback for Green Hills. And the guy that picked it off was Danian Cize, the same kid that ran the initial kickoff return back. So this kid's been making plays all game long, ended up leading to a touchdown drive for Mount Juliet. The two-point conversion was no good. And as we sit right now at halftime, it is currently 13-12, Mount Juliet over the home team, the Green Hill. I'm sorry, the Green Hill Hawks.
There you go, you got it. All right, so who has the momentum going in the locker room right now, do you think?
It has to be Mount Juliet, Joe. I mean, Green Hill was running continuous, long drives, taking up all the time of possession. And the 3-and-outs were mounting up for this Mount Juliet team. But ever since that interception, it's really seemed like the Mount Juliet offense has had a consistent rhythm to them. They've stuck more to the run game. Currently, they have a sophomore at quarterback. His name is Tyler Travers. He has been struggling a little bit but has got going as of late. And the defense for Mount Juliet has not just been making stops in the red zone, but they've been making plays to keep Green Hill at bay. And since then, they have not scored since after that interception. There was a huge play before the half. It was a pass all the way downfield. Tyler Travers threw to John Michael Crudup for a huge play that was tipped by the defender that he ended up catching and diving for that set him up on the 20-yard line with about 20 seconds left. They could not convert, and they could not score before the time ran out, so the score stayed the same. But still, a lot of highlight plays, a lot of big moments in this game, and it is super tight going to this half. I expect this game to go down to the wire in the fourth quarter.
Our man Junie Riddle on with us right now from Green Hill Mount Juliet, a region championship game currently at halftime. And Junie, I want to go back to the Mount Juliet offense too, in terms of just like when it's what do you think actually started clicking? Because they return the opening kickoff for a touchdown, right? And then they go like a couple 3-and-outs. It does kind of give a feel like the offense is almost kind of stale in a way when you don't get to find that rhythm. But what have they been doing, I guess, to be able to at least get that first nice positive offensive play and then be able to kind of compound on that?
Elijah, the answer is simple here. It has been the run game with the running back, Danian I think it's Cizay. It's spelled like O-size, but it's Cizay. I love that last name. It's an awesome last name. But they have been giving this kid the rock more consistently, taking the ball out of the young quarterback's hands. Guys, I've mentioned this multiple times when I'm out at games. I always look at the linemen, and that really determines to me which team is going to have the advantage. And Mount Juliet on both fronts of these lines have the bigger presence here, and they're finally starting to use that to their advantage to establish the run, to set up the pass later. To begin the game, they've really been putting the ball in their young quarterback's hands, and it seems like this young kid is not ready for this big of a moment. So they've established the run. The defense has made some big plays to keep Green Hill out of the end zone, and that's been the difference in this game. I look for Green Hill to come out and kind of make some adjustments on their offense. They've been running really the same kind of things, the RPOs, the tunnel screen, the bubble screens on the outside, inside handoffs. Their quarterback is really mobile. He'll be taking it out onside the edge. They need to figure out some other ways to get their players involved here in order to adjust, because I feel like Mount Juliet has kind of figured out what they had going on, and their last couple drives have not had a lot of momentum.
Junie, take a break, brother. You got halftime. Get something to drink, something to eat, and call us back in the second half, man. We appreciate you more than you'll ever know, brother. Thank you.
Absolutely, guys. Y'all keep killing it.
All right, we will. That's Junie Riddle at the Mount Juliet Green Hill game. All right, we'll take our break as we do the top and the bottom of the hour. We'll give you all the scores that are happening. We got a big one happening down with Stewart's Creek and Riverdale. We'll give you that score and many others right here on the Game Blitz, brought to you by Apple Collision Center, National Playmakers Academy, on 102.5, 106.3, the game. All right, welcome back here to the Game Blitz on 102.5, 106.3, the game brought to you by Apple Collision Center, National Playmakers Academy. Big Joe here along with Kenny on the other side, Big Kenny on the side of the booth, making things happen, and our man Elijah Campbell. All right, bottom of the hour, you know what time it is, friends? Scoreboard time. All right, here we go. Most of these games are at halftime, and they're coming in fast and furious. Lipscomb over BGA, 28-0. Blackman over Siegel, 20-14. Brentwood leads Centennial, 7-6. According to Russell Van Ozy, Main Street Preps, Centennials almost doubled Brentwood in yardage, but doesn't matter. Brentwood leads 7-6. Gallatin and Clarksville tied at 7. Springfield on top of Northwest, 35-0. Gordonsville on top of Clay County, 7-6. Coffee County leads Ray County, 28-0. Cookeville on top of Shelbyville, 27-14. DeKalb County over Stowe Memorial, 21-7. FRA leads Good Pasture, 45-0. Nolensville on top of Franklin County, 6-0. Mount Juliet leads Green Hill, 13-12 at half. Ravenwood over Independence, 28-7. Laverne over McGavick, 14-0. Creekwood leads Lawrence County, 27-0. Lewis County, 7. Riverside, 0. Marshall County, 21. Greenbrier, 7. MBA, 35. Knox Catholic, 3. I'm getting a million Marcel Reed tweets again. That young man is something else. Nashville Christian, 28, DCA, 7. Smyrna, 24, Overton, 6. Oakland, 35, Rockville, nothing. Page, 38, Lincoln County, 3. Henry County, 34, Portland, nothing. Richland, 19, Loretto, 14. Stewart's Creek leads Riverdale, 14-7 in the third quarter. Winner gets in the playoff in that game. The losing team does not. East Nashville over Smith County, 14-7. Station Camp over Hunter's Lane, 31-0. Sycamoa over Joe Burns, 20-0. Trousdale County over Watertown, 13-7. Waverly scored again. Leads Fairview, 26-14.
Wow.
Wayne County, 21. Collingwood, nothing. West Creek, 24. Hendersonville, 7. White House Heritage, 13. White House over White House Heritage, 13-0. Westmoreland, 35. Harpeth, nothing. McCauley over Pope John Paul, 21-14. And Baylor leads Ryan, 31-0. That's your Game Blitz update, my man. Anything stand out to you, Elijah?
Well, now, we talked earlier in this hour about some of the shocking results of the night. Obviously, Laverne being up on McGavick the way they are is awfully surprising. Smyrna being up a couple touchdowns on John Overton is pretty surprising. But one that we haven't got to talk about much yet is what Nashville Christian's doing to DCA. He said 28-7. And that's, man, a game that's a region title game. Winner wins the region. And this is a team which are playing their best football at the right time.
Right.
Both incredibly well coached. I mean, two of the most well coached teams in that entire classification in the state. And the fact that it's a 3-touchdown game is very surprising to me. I know this isn't the DCA team that, you know, took the field last year and they won state, but they've been playing so well lately that it kind of looked like that team at times. They have a Mr. Football candidate. They got a lot going on there in Donaldson. And the fact that Nashville Christian's being able to put up the numbers they have on them right now is definitely one of those that I'm not surprised Nashville Christian's winning. I'm surprised they're winning by 3 touchdowns.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that. That'd be a big win for Nashville Christian. That way they capture the region championship. All right, back to the Brentwood Centennial game. As I said during the update, Russell Van Ozy, Main Street Preps, great, great writer, great follow on Twitter. They do a great job.
Good as it gets.
Said they Centennial's got nearly 200 yards total offense. Brentwood around 80, but Brentwood had a long touchdown run, and they lead 7-6. I've played the game when it's been like that, and you've just grown up and down the field, and you get all these yards, but the other team has a couple of breaks. I mean, it can be deflating if you let it, because you're doing so much, you're getting nowhere, and you feel like the other team is doing nothing, and they're getting everywhere. So that could have a big factor going forward.
Those are the losses that are the most deflating, especially in a situation where if you win, you could possibly win your region. And to be able to do almost everything on the football field in a better manner than the other team, but still not winning in the one stat that really matters, is something that coaches lose sleep over, right? I mean, it's funny. I saw a video the other day, Joe. It was from a couple of years ago. A Big Ten coach talking about the stat they don't care about the most. And it's Kirk Ferentz from Iowa saying offensive yardage, which is hilarious because that's how you score points, right? But the guy didn't care about that. Like, they'll manufacture points the Iowa way, as I like to call it, which is any way other than total offense. And a lot of teams can win that way. And this is kind of what we're seeing tonight. I mean, Brentwood's defense is really, really good. They've been in some low-scoring games this year. They've won some really tight low-scoring games. They can win in that style. I mean, they're playing almost into their hands with that tonight. They got them right where they want them, it sounds like. But that's another one of those games that if Centennial wins, that is pretty significant. They could be region champs depending on what unfolds in the Ravenwood game.
Ravenwood up 28-7. That game is now in the third quarter going forward. Another update real quick. Nashville Christian has scored again. They lead DCA 35-7. I did not think I would see a running clock in this game, but they're Nashville Christian's 2 points away from a running clock tonight.
That's a statement. Not only are you winning a region championship, which is obviously a goal that every team in the state has coming into the season, but to do it in this manner is a message to the rest of the state. A part of the rest of the state in that classification is Friendship Christian, a team that is in the Elijah Campbell Platinum Undefeated Club.
Right.
That's once you reach, 10-0 and you're going into the playoffs undefeated. I mean, there are cushion chairs up there, velvet rope, everything you could possibly imagine. They get to experience that, but they're, getting calls on their phone right now saying, watch out for Nashville Christian because this team can threaten to violently remove you from this club in the time of the year you don't want to be removed from the club. The time where being removed from the club ends your season. Nashville Christian can do that. If they're doing this to DCA right now, the only other team that's done this to DCA this year is Friendship Christian. So it's a statement win in its own right from Nashville Christian tonight.
Only another fact that's kind of left out that I need to bring up, the fact if you do in that private school part, you win the region, you get a week off. So you don't have to,
and that's so nice.
And you're home field for at least the next game. And, yeah, but you get the time off, which is really good. They make sure the next team, so DCA would have to play next week. I don't know if it's a home game or I don't know, but they don't get the week off. So that's another benefit of winning all that goes on there. So I'm trying to get one more score that popped in here real quick. Oh, yeah, Waverly slip 26-14 over Fairview. If we talked earlier about the
young,
separation. We talked earlier about the Waverly program, what they went through last year. And I hear there's a huge crowd at Waverly tonight. They're listening to us, the Game Blitz out there tonight. That'd be just a great win for that program of keeping the team together. Coach Golden over there doing a great job with all that. Hats off to him, Elijah, for keeping everything going and just, making these guys believe what's going on the field.
And it's here's why I love how they've managed that program. It's one thing to overcome adversity when you're losing football games, when things aren't going well at practice, within the confines of this silly game that we get to talk about for 6 hours on a weekly basis.
Right.
It's one thing to keep other people focused and being able to help them bounce back from adversity when natural disasters happen, things that affect your life, things that affected the lives of other people, that has taken the lives of other people. And for it to be catastrophic as to what it was to their program in terms of in their school and their community, that's an event that rocks communities. And being able to regroup, be able to put things in perspective, and being able to bounce back after real life adversity, and to be able to run the table the way they have in a solid region, and then if they're able to cap it off tonight against one of the more impressive teams in 3A in Fairview, a very, very good Fairview team, then that's an awe-inspiring story. And it's a testament to the mental fortitude of those kids and those coaches. It'd be hats off to them for that. And then if you want to get back in the football side too, they have a kid named Easton Elliott who has ran for over 2,000 yards in not even 9 complete games this season. So if you want to talk about other more mind-blowing and awe-inspiring happenings, helmet sticker for that kid for the season he's put on, because that is that's how you can lead a team to 8-1 and 6-0 in your region and being a region champs, if you're able to hold on to the results that they have right now.
Before you go with the break, I got a Clarksville to score. They're up on Gallatin 21-7. What does that do for seeding in that region if Clarksville holds on to beats Gallatin?
It's significant. So if Clarksville beats Gallatin and Hendersonville beats West Creek, which West Creek's been giving Hendersonville a game tonight, Clarksville is 2, Hendersonville is 3, and Gallatin is 4. I want to say now if Gallatin was able to come back and beat Clarksville and then Hendersonville beats West Creek, it's a 3-way tie for second. But if Hendersonville loses and they get upset tonight, then it's really not going to matter as much. Clarksville will still hold on to the 3. Gallatin and Hendersonville will be tied at 2-3 in the region. Hendersonville beat Gallatin, so Gallatin will still be 4. Hendersonville will still be 3 after tonight.
You are amazing. I've got the region pulled up here, and I'm trying to figure it all out. It would take me an hour to figure that out, and you did it in 20 seconds. That's why
because I did it an hour last night.
That's why he pay you the $5 an hour, because you got that's going on there. All right, we'll take a break. Elijah, don't go anywhere. We got more game blitz for you till midnight tonight. A lot of games are in halftime going to the third quarter. We got more for you right here. Listen to the game blitz on 102.5, 106 of the game, brought to you by our good friends at Apple Collision Center and National Playmakers Academy. All right, welcome back to the Game Blitz right here on 102.5, 106 for the game, brought to you by Apple Collision Center and National Playmakers Academy. Let's go to the phone line, brought to you by Elijah Campbell Enterprises and our Lance Mackey's at the McGavick-Laverne game. Lance, what you got, buddy?
What's up, guys? We are just heading into the fourth quarter. Right before the fourth started, we had the Raiders drove all the way down the field to score a touchdown. It is 14-7 Laverne. McGavick is just running tempo all the way down the field, kind of catching the defense off guard, and it paid off there. Now they're looking to get a big stop here to come back down and tie it up.
What's McGavick doing differently? He said they have the tempo and the kind of the momentum going on that they didn't have in the first half. What do they got going for him now?
Well, their kickoff return team seems to be gashing them about 30 to 40 yards every time they're touching the ball, and then they're just running the ball down their throat. Getting big runs out of Dre Jones, senior running back. And then on defense, they're just pinning their ears back and coming in here. Actually, the senior quarterback for Laverne is down on the sideline, so they are back down to their backup quarterback here for Laverne as well. So that's a big piece. It's very physical, and you can kind of feel it here with these. Like, they're just scratching and clawing, guys. They're both teams, you can tell, are just really want this win, want to get to the playoffs, which means so much, especially to these seniors.
All right, Lance, thank you. Call us back with another update. Appreciate you, man.
All right, guys.
Can you imagine that right now, Elijah? I mean, this is, you know, whatever the speech Coach Burnett and McGavick had to his guys said, look, we either got 24 more minutes or we got nothing. I mean, you got to go out and get it done. And hopefully the message resonated. McGavick now on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those you tell those kids that, look, we didn't do all of that in the summer. We didn't go through all those weightlifting sessions. We didn't go through all of those practices and you know, the hot Tennessee summer. We didn't go through this entire season, which is a war of attrition. It is a grind week after week. We didn't go through running this gauntlet of a region for this to be over. And you have 24 minutes to make all of that last. And they're showing it right now. That's where the tempo comes in. There's a little bit of fuel, fire that came out of the locker room from McGavick. And I love the tempo here thing, where if you have an athletic advantage over another team, I think making them have to keep up with you, not subbing, if you know that your team is in better shape, that maybe it's just a matter of execution. If you can just wear the other team down like that and kind of just last a little longer on the field, then you're going to be able to start putting up points. You're going to be able to find where the gaps are in their defense, where the weaknesses can be, if they show it when they're tired. So I love the decision to really go up tempo, maybe not making a lot of substitutions on offense for McGavick. And it sounds like they're going to make this an interesting game. They're not going to go down quietly. They're too well coached to go down quietly.
Sounds like they've taken the Tennessee Vols playbook and just like go, 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 and keep it going high up.
I love that.
Let me ask you this. You know, Oakland right now scored again. They're on top of Rockville 42-0. I just think sometimes losses are good. I mean, they're not great, but I think but after that loss to CPA by Oakland, Elijah, Oakland has just come out and basically just been very quiet and destroyed teams since then. I think in the back of Kevin Creasy's mind a little bit, he's like, you know what? That was a nice little wake-up call for our football team, because they've played lights out since that loss.
It's funny, Joe, there's a video that has gone around on the internets. It's one of my favorite funny videos. This guy, you know, he's got a graph. There's an x-axis, y-axis, and he's pointing, you know, to this linear this, you know, this line on the graph, and it, you know, it's going in a correlation, an upward correlation. He goes, so it seems that the more that you bleep around, the more you're going to find out. And that's kind of what happened with Oakland. I mean, if you play around with teams that you should be beating, you're going to learn a lesson the hard way. And that lesson the hard way was the CPA game. You learned that, you know, you're not completely invincible. And if you cut out the bleeping around, then you're not going to find out what the consequences are as much, because one correlates to the other. And I think Coach Creasy probably did a really good job of saying, hey, you're on planet Earth. You're not, you know, you're not completely invincible. You can bleed too, the way everybody else can. You're still playing the same game at the end of the day. And it turns around, they had that loss, and ever since then, they have just beaten the brakes off everybody. I don't think they've given up a point since then. Is that correct, Joe? I think that was 2.5 weeks ago.
I think you are correct on that. Loss. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Have not surrendered a point since that loss. And now, obviously, this is Liberty Creek, their first year in existence, but Rockvale is a team that earlier in the year was blowing teams out, like Laverne, who is a potential playoff team, beat them like 44-12 earlier in the season. Like, this is a team that has been able to score some, and they've shut them out. They've completely running clocked it. Like, that's what you expect from a team as a perennial power that faced a setback. You expect them to come back stronger. Like you said, Joe, no one wants to lose a football game if there's such thing as a positive loss. I would say that's it.
I agree with you. By the way, got an update. Brentwood just scored. They lead Centennial now 15-7. Ravenwood up big on Independence. Wow. It's like, so if that stays the way it is, who wins the region? If Brentwood holds on and Ravenwood wins, who wins the region there? I'm sorry to ask these questions on the fly, but you know all this stuff.
Oh, no. That is okay. So if Brentwood wins, they're going to need Independence to beat Ravenwood. Now, Ravenwood wins the region. Let's see. Ravenwood wins the region by beating Independence and Brentwood beating Centennial. So if all holds, Ravenwood is your region champ. Brentwood would be second, and then that puts Centennial and of Redwood Centennial and Independence tied. Independence won that game, I believe, earlier in the season. And if that's the case, then Centennial at 8-2 will be fourth in the region.
My goodness.
So if the results hold, Centennial at 8-2 is going on the road to play a region winner.
Well, I know you like basketball real quick. And
yeah.
Let's see, somebody's tweeted to me that Tennessee's beaten Gonzaga 47-25 in the first half.
Oh,
is that good?
That's a pay-per-view game, yeah.
I don't follow college basketball. Is that a big win for the Vols?
Oh, well, unfortunately, it's an exhibition. It's a pay-per-view for charity game, which I'm not going to knock anyone for playing a game for charity. I don't want that to be the takeaway here, is that I'm knocking them for playing a charity game.
Okay.
But I would love for this to be a regular season game. However, Gonzaga is a top five team coming into the year. I think Tennessee's a top 10 team coming into the year. I think it is a statement win if they're able to beat that team by 20-plus points. That is insane. Tennessee is going to be the real deal in basketball. The SEC's got three teams that could win the whole thing, being real.
Kentucky, you know. Arkansas, and who?
And Tennessee.
Tennessee. Look at you, man. Update on the Independence game. Ravenwood now leading 38-7. That's 38 unanswered for Ravenwood. Springfield now up on Clarksville Northwest. Shocker here, 42-0.
They're good.
Does Springfield have the most shutouts this year? I know they had like five in a row or something crazy.
They had a ridiculous amount to start the year. I know. I think they went like, what, their first nine quarters or so without giving up a point. Let me pull them up here as a 5A friend of ours. Springfield's got one of the better defenses in the entire state.
So far, if you look, four shutout games they've got right now. So that's of right now. I mean, I'm counting the shutout tonight with Northwest. So 40% of your games, you shut out your opponents, not bad.
And the last game they played was against Portland, who is going to end up being third in this region, a good Portland team, 40-0. If you take away the games against Beach, Beach was really the only team they'll put up a lot of points on. Beach put up 42 on them, which I thought was mind-blowing. But if you take away that game, only one game have they given up more than 14 points, and that was Henry County.
Wow, that's crazy. By the way, National Christian scored again. They're up over DCA 42-7. I never thought I'd see a running clock in that game, and we got one right now that's happening. It's crazy.
I mean, there's a lot of winners tonight, Joe, because a lot of people are winning region titles. A lot of people are clinching spots in the playoffs. Like, a lot of people are winning a lot of things. It's hard to be the biggest winner tonight, but you can make a legitimate case that Nashville Christian is the biggest winner of the night. That's remarkable.
It is. White House over White House Heritage, 30-0. I know White House is in that region with Fairview and Waverly, so they'll probably get in as a third or fourth, because Waverly right now leads Fairview 26-14. That game is now going to the fourth quarter right there. That's a fun little region in 3A with those teams.
It is, and that playoff picture is basically set already. The only thing we don't know is who's one and who's two. White House has three secured, and Sycamore's got four secured, because Cheatham County and White House Heritage were 1-4 in the region. Stewart County was, unfortunately for them, been kind of the punching bag of the region. They went 0-5. But that's like, I mean, the top three are really good. White House gave Waverly a really good game. If you remember, that was one of the ones that was on my TV 30.
That's right.
They gave Waverly everything they had. I don't think Waverly had their first lead until the fourth quarter. That was one of those games that, you know, throughout the night we're getting updates, and it's like we're watching the game on TV and we're like, wow, White House is really, you know, giving them a really good game. And I think Fairview ended up beating them pretty good, I believe. But White House is a pretty solid team too. And Sycamore's hung around. They've hung around. They've won the amount of games they need to get into the playoffs. Unfortunately for Sycamore, you have to play the winner of East Nashville and Smith County on the road. Both those teams are really, really good.
Oh, my goodness.
And White House will get one of those teams in the first round, too, whoever loses tonight's game. So, unfortunately for those teams, as good as they've been in the region and as battle-tested as they are in the region, it's not going to be easy for their first-round playoff game.
Another upset tonight that's happening, they're only up by two, but Loretto over Richland, that's a Class 2A Region 5 game. Mount Pleasant's pretty much going to wrap up that region right there. But Loretto, again, talk about winning region games. Richland 7-2 overall. Loretto's 4-5, but in the region – they're both 3-1. If Loretto holds on, that's kind of a big win for them.
Not only do they end up stealing second place in the region, they're going to be able to host a playoff game.
Woo.
That is a pretty significant deal, and that's the difference between traveling to Decatur County, Riverside, or Lewis County. That's like where the region they're having to play for their region pairing for the first couple rounds of the playoffs is with Region 6. That's out in West Tennessee, those teams are. So tonight it's a matter of not just pulling off an upset, but like getting to stay home and host a playoff game and having to avoid that rough travel for the first round and setting yourself up for a potential run. So Richland's been great all year, but Loretta, like you said, they've hung around, and they're going to hang around long enough to be able to host a playoff game if the result stands.
I love it. We cover all the teams in Middle Tennessee, so stick around here. We got three more hours of great high school football coverage for you. Most games are now moving into the fourth quarter. A lot of regions still undecided, playoff implications on the line, so we have a lot of fun for you. We do the top and the bottom of the hour. We'll give you a complete scoreboard update. That's coming up next. You listen to the Game Blitz right here, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by our good friends at Apple Collision Center and National Playmakers Academy.